This is Identity at the Center.
If it has anything to do with IAM, this is the go-to podcast. Now your hosts, Jim McDonald and Jeff Stedman.
Welcome to the Identity at the Center podcast. I'm Jeff and that's Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Oh, not so bad. Yourself?
Doing pretty good, man. I feel like I've been the road warrior. I really haven't traveled between June and about a week ago, but now it's 2 weeks in a row, about to be 3 weeks in a row. We're doing Authenticate Conference on Monday. I'm sitting here in a hotel airport hotel in Calgary, Canada. Had a great week here. It's a beautiful country, beautiful people. Everyone's been like so friendly, which I mean, I don't even want to say that in the United States people aren't as friendly.
Well, Canadians are famous for their friendliness, I think. I think that's kind of a known thing.
It's definitely how I felt since I've been here. Like that's got some truth to it. But living out of suitcases is not all glamour.
Three whole weeks. That's rookie numbers, baby. I'm on like week 7, about to be 8 and going on to like 12.
Yeah. So what I'm doing is though contiguous weeks, like including the weekend. So yeah. I left on the 1st. I'll get home on the 19th. And what I think is, here's the way I was looking at it. Like I finished up. So I was here in Canada working on a workshop. It ended yesterday. And so I had the choice to, you know, fly out tomorrow morning, go back to Atlanta, and then have to go out to San Diego on Sunday. So basically have just like one full day at home, or just go to San Diego early and get there, go to the pool. And hopefully they've got like a tiki bar that makes pina coladas that, you know, will keep me happy.
I think he chose wisely. I had to come home because I literally had to just restock my entire suitcase. I've been gone all week as well, Sunday through Friday. So today is October 13th. It's 11 p.m. Eastern time. This is how you and I roll, trying to get something out for next Monday, which would be what, the 14th, 15th, 16th, first day of Authenticate. This show is actually going to compete with us because we're being probably in the middle of a keynote doing a live show at Authenticate. But I had to come home. I needed a day to like reload my suitcase for yet another full week of travel. See my dogs. My wife's out of time. She's traveling. So like coordinating. She drove to the airport, left my car there. I got home a couple hours ago, picked up the car, went home. And then I'm going to come back early Sunday morning, drop my car off there, and then she's going to pick up the car on Monday on the way back. So like, we're doing this whole shuffle home, game.
When you get home, the dogs go bonkers, right?
Two of them did. The third one acknowledged my existence. Definitely my wife's dog, our newest puppy. He was happy I let him out of his crate, and then was like immediately dashed around the house looking to see where mom was. And I was very disappointed that it was just me. But the other two were happy to see me.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, if your dogs aren't happy to see you after you've been gone for a week, then you're not a good person.
That's true. Dogs are the best people. I'm a big dog fan. I think people who have dogs know it and get it. It's like, they're always happy to see you when you come home.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love dogs. And the only reason I don't have a dog is because, I mean, I travel not nearly as much as you, Jeff, but don't have anybody at home who I could, you know, count on taking care of a dog and cleaning up after the dog and feeding the dog. So I mean, checking a dog into a kennel every week is not very fair.
Yeah, no, that's not cool. Yeah, we don't do that either. So I get it. I totally get it.
I've been busy. I mean, you know, not this week, but last week was the Octane conference in San Francisco.
How was that?
Well, first let me just comment. San Francisco, I love San Francisco. I've been the biggest San Francisco fan for a long time. And, you know, I think that there's been some things over the years that, you know, have kind of put certain parts of it in decline. But I was down by the Moscone Center, and they've really done a lot to, you know, kind of have a police presence. So for me anyway, I felt very safe, you know, walking around that area and walking from the hotel and to the center. So drastic improvement, I think, even from last year. But the most remarkable thing was it was 90 degrees in the city of San Francisco in October. I don't think I've ever been in San Francisco and it was 90 degrees before. And I've been there a lot of times.
Especially for being on the Bay, it's generally a little bit cooler compared to the rest, which is why I like it so much.
Yeah, they have those microclimates out there. So like in the East Bay, Oakland, it could be 90, 95 degrees. And in downtown San Francisco, it could be 55 degrees. Or on the Bay, it could be like, freezing and windy. But it was not windy, and it was definitely not cold. And so I was expecting to have to wear a jacket, but, as I was walking around with a jacket, I was like breaking a sweat.
Yeah, that's not my jam. I'm glad I was in D.C. that week. It was hot there, but I was inside pretty much the entire time in a convention center doing stuff like that. So you were at Octane. I was at Identity Week America. Sounds like we both had a good time. I know I had a good time. We recorded a couple episodes. Actually, recorded three episodes while I was out there.
I just had a moderate time. Panel. First off, like the energy level at Octane was off the charts. And so I had an opportunity to sit with a lot of folks and record, interviews. I'm going to get those uploaded. You're going to piece them all together into some kind of...
I'm curious to see what you actually did. You sent me a text with kind of one of the interviews. I was like, all right, this is not actually too bad. So we'll see what the final product turns out.
My expectation is that was the worst of the bunch because I was kind of figuring out more as I was going along. So
I heard you got Daniel on camera too.
I did get Daniel.
We've been trying to get Daniel on the show. He's our boss. Yeah, and he's been elusive.
He did a really good job.
Yeah, he's great.
The one thing that he did was, so I had these lavalier microphones and he, it's like he was leaving to go to the airport and he had my lavalier mic on and I didn't realize it until like 2-3 minutes later. And I got my next guest coming in a few minutes. I'm like, oh my God. And I'm like texting him. He's not answering. Then I try and call him. It goes to voicemail. I'm like, what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. Am I basically going to have to take my one remaining lavalier mic and pass it back and forth? Fortunately, he then called me back and brought back the microphone. So it all worked out. But, the conference was super high energy. They had a few big announcements. The biggest announcement was kind of like all around bringing AI into the product and how it's going to manifest. And so one of those was what they're calling ITP, Identity Threat Protection. And essentially it's, using the AI lever to leveraging the AI technology to, work with this big data that they're collecting to, recognize patterns. So applying a model to recognize patterns that would be something that would say, you want to then trigger an action like disable that account. Then they've got some other features that rolling out, which sound less impressive, but when it all plugs together, it makes sense. Like big announcement about single logout, which I think is a little bit proprietary. But if you think about it, it's like if you realize Jeff's account's been compromised, maybe someone stole his session cookie and is now, logging in and trying to do bad things to Sam. Maybe he clicked on a phishing email, et cetera. We can not only disable his account, but close all the sessions that are open in other applications. And that's a really big deal because, even a client that I'm currently working with, I found out that, they leave really long session timeouts. And that's one of the biggest forms of, hijacking a person's, they're not stealing their credentials, but they get these session cookies mm-hmm. and can bypass MFA and get logged in as that person. So if that session isn't timed out, now if you're giving 30 days, 60 days, 180 days for that session to live, I think that's the maximum in Okta anyway. But think about that. Someone could take that session, that cookie could be that old. They could use it to get in. So overall, that was something I think every one of the people there was like really excited about, because when you think about the current capabilities within the tool, it's kind of a black box and you don't know what it's doing. This is looks like it's going to be much more exposed so that people have some levers and can kind of see how it's making the decisions and what decisions are being made.
Yeah, I think you need to be able to tune it somehow. Authentication is kind of a very tricky thing, I think, especially when you're trying to fingerprint essentially what is a valid authentication session versus not valid, considering the number of devices and locations and times of days and things like that. So it'll be interesting. I feel a little bit vindicated that you said AI at Okta, because there was definitely a theme at SailPoint Navigate this week, AI being injected into the SailPoint product as well. I feel like I called this a couple months back. I'm sure they were working on it before that, but I'm going to take credit anyway. AI seems to be
AI.
I'm taking credit for all AI, good or bad. Bring it on. No, I just think that, you know, it's a natural evolution, right, of the identity products, and large language models are sort of the AI du jour, and they're graduating from historically AI being machine learning or pattern matching and things like that to, oh, now you can actually talk, in quotation marks, right, type to the AI to ask specific questions, generate reports, help with configurations of applications, things like that. Microsoft is certainly getting the game with things like Copilot, but AI was a big focus as well at the SailPoint Navigate conference, which is where I was all week.
I think a conference, a vendor-specific conference where they didn't talk about AI in their product would be a major miss at this point.
Yeah, it's like zero trust of the last couple of years. If your product didn't have zero trust in it, you were pretty much done for.
Yeah.
Now everything's AI.
So I wonder if this was the same thing at SailPoint, but at Okta, they kind of laid out their roadmap, both on the customer cloud as well as the workforce cloud. There's a lot of new functionality that they're promising. I mean, really on the workforce side, it's like that converged identity. So it's access management, which they're already kind of like top dog. There's IGA, privilege access management, cloud infrastructure entitlement management. It's like the way I see it, like for them to be successful in that, they have two choices. One is to go out and buy somebody for each one of those things. The other is spend a lot of money on R&D. But the last thing, the thing that I want to make sure that, like, hopefully they don't do is they just talk about these things and roll out like not a very good version of it, because I think that would kind of stain the brand. Because mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you have to, if you're going to say we're going to have something, you got to have it.
Yeah, I think that convergence is another word that came up as well. Now we're starting to see the rise of platforms. Okta, you know, Okta's creating one. SailPoint definitely is creating one. This idea of converged identity, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, unified identity platforms, right? Things like that. Kind of brings me back to the old days of Oracle and IBM and CA, where there was platforms, then it became best of breed. And then guess what? We're back to bell bottoms again.
You know, back to bell bottoms, yeah. You know, I don't think those things like Oracle CA are deserving of the term platform. I think they're suites. They're just a bunch of products that they put under the umbrella. And I hope that's not what Okta, SailPoint, all these others do. I hope they build a platform. To me, a platform is something that has some open, like an openness factor to it, so that entrepreneurs can go out and build add-ons to that platform. And so they create almost like an opportunity, like a business model, like build your business around our platform. I think Salesforce has done that. I think some social media platforms have done that. So
ServiceNow.
Yeah. What's that?
ServiceNow is another one.
ServiceNow is exactly. To me, that's a platform. And I think just saying like, oh, you know, we're going to be a closed platform, I think that almost disqualifies you from the term platform.
Well, good news. SailPoint is not going to be a closed platform, at least not in the future. They did mention sometime in the next couple years allowing people to develop like basically like plugins. It's almost like they're creating the browser, and they're going to have some sort of browser plugin architecture that lets you do different things with the data that's in there. Very API heavy, meaning, which is a good thing. I think you can do a lot with the APIs that are out there. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what happens you know, with the SailPoint platform, because that's to me where they're headed and what they were kind of talking about all week.
Yeah, I think that, you know, again, IGA is like a great starting point to build an identity platform from, because I really think that IGA, all the kind of like core identity technologies, is, truly has its arms around identity, or it's the closest thing. I think when you look at your authentication system, they're calling it like, oh, it's an identity. It's identity as a service. But I think it's almost like accounts as a service. Like those are accounts. Like you can have multiple accounts for signing on, but you still just have one identity.
Well, I think IGA is the hardest thing to do in identity, to do it well, I mean. Like, I think that's the one that has the most complexity involved with it. And there aren't really standards if you think about it from an IGA perspective. Yes, there's like common things like onboarding and offboarding and access reviews and access requests. But other than SCIM, there really isn't like a standard to do any of that stuff. On the authentication side, you've got OAuth, you got SAML, you got OpenID Connect, right? Stuff like that. And it's a very specific path you follow. Okay, I need to authenticate. And then once I authenticate, then I can get to this thing with an authorization. IGA throws in a whole bunch of complexities in there, especially from a business rules perspective. So I feel like if I were to build an identity product, I would start with IGA, lock that down, and then try to expand from there. Problem with that approach, though, ends up being, well, everybody's already solved the authentication problem. So now, yeah, is it easier to get in from a sales perspective if I'm trying to sell this product if everyone's already using a different authentication platform and trying to migrate people off of that?
Do you
I don't know the answer. But it's interesting to see how Okta and SailPoint have gone different directions with it. Or approached it, I should say, from different directions.
How did you used to think of Active Directory? Not talking Azure Active Directory. Did you think of it as an identity system or as... Like, I had one coworker in the past who used to call it, he's like, it's just a network operating system. And we thought that's a bit more than just a network operating system. It's also an authentication system.
And authorization.
But I don't think those are, it's an identity system.
Yeah.
And I kind of look at Azure AD and I'm like, okay, it's got a lot of similarity from that perspective. It's, is it really tracking the identity? But now there's, you know, they're starting to expand into, are you pulling it from the HR system, but are they correlating all the accounts to that identity? Because ultimately it's like, right, when Jeff separates from the organization, are we shutting off all the accounts that he has access to? That's really what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm. I used to, I mean, for me, AD and the role that I've had when I've been around AD closest was, it was authentication and authorization. That was pretty much it. Yes, yeah. It's backbone for other things within Windows Server, but for me, as an identity person, it's authentication and it's authorization.
I think that I feel the same way. I think that tactically speaking, though, the folks who run AD in organizations have wound up becoming so central to how identity is handled within the organization. You say, this is the tool that I know, I love, and it's our identity system. And we're going to plug Azure AD on top of it, which I guess is not even the current term for it. And that's what we do for identity. So we don't need an IGA. We don't need any external third-party systems. We don't need
privileged access
management because Azure gives us privileged access management.
Well, to some degree, I think it's... You know, if we start talking about, now we're back to platforms, right? Microsoft has their own platform too. And it's good at Microsoft things. But once you get outside of Microsoft things, it's not so great. With the exception of authentication. They've definitely embraced standards like OAuth and OpenID Connect and so forth, right? To do authentication. But I'm not going to do a SAP access review with Microsoft Entra. That would be crazy. But they're so good at marketing, it sounds like almost like you could and you should.
It's interesting you bring up that SAP access reviews because I was working with a client this week to develop an IGA strategy. And so, of course, they are in the throes of deploying SAP for HR and for their ERP. It's going to be a big bang. And, you know, fortunately from my perspective, you know, their IGA roadmap really won't, or their IGA platform won't go in until after that ERP is in place and should have time to be settled. But as always, you're kind of faced with the question of, okay, do we need to do GRC? And then the question is, can GRC or SAP Identity Manager do everything? And that could be our IGA. Or reverse it, can we have some IGA and manage all the roles and everything down to the entitlement level and do access reviews and access provisioning from the IGA to SAP? I mean, there's the philosophically, can it be done is one question. But I think more importantly, it's like, do you want to do that? And I feel like, you know, for that latter one, the answer is heck no. I also think it's heck no for, do you want to take the SAP piece and try and make that your enterprise IGA? Just my experience with seeing this one, I'm a little dated. I know some of the tools have come a little bit further, but, you know, there's no way that they have caught up with some of the major IGA platforms out there.
Yeah, SAP still gives me nightmares when I used to have to manage that from an identity perspective. Not a fan. Yeah, run into this question a lot with us. For whatever reason, between SAP and between every other IGA platform, if an organization has SAP, they probably have SAP GRC. And it's really good at that specific task. And it gets less good the further you go away from that task. Do some basic things, you know, Windows Active Directory. That's kind of a no-brainer. Everybody can do Active Directory. That's not hard. But is the interface up to snuff? You know, does it have all the business rules and logic that you want to be able to configure in it versus customization? And I feel like this is why IGA is so hard, is because it's hard to have a one-size-fits-all, especially when you start dealing with apps like SAP or Dynamics or Oracle or any other, you know, large ERP type implementation.
Yeah. I've been in IT for like roughly 25 years. And when I've seen failures happen in IT, it's been ERP deployments, it's been IAM deployments, and maybe CRM. But CRM is mostly, they didn't do a good job with the data, so put that off to the side. You're talking about ERP and IAM. Like, that's where the big failures happen. Here's my feeling for my advice for IAM practitioners out there. If an ERP platform is being replaced or being launched, like, don't set yourself up to be the reason that it fails. Because those projects are pretty damn expensive. The reason IAM projects usually fail is the same thing. They get tied into too many business critical applications. And then for whatever reason, they don't operate. And the business critical applications can't do their job because of your IAM system. Don't let that happen. Don't be that person.
Yeah, don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy.
So we got another conference we're going to in a couple days, Authenticate. I feel like this is, everybody decided, apparently October was conference month between Octane, Identity Week America, SailPoint Navigate. I'm sure there was probably a Gartner thing that took place. And now you and I are headed to San Diego. I don't know where I'm going.
Carlsbad, anymore. Yeah.
Carlsbad, just north of the city of San Diego, to do a few things at Authenticate. We're going to do a keynote live show, which I'm a little nervous about. We haven't done anything like that before.
Well, here's one thing I was thinking. Yeah. So I had a reflection on this today. I'm like, I don't know that we've ever had that many people listen to one of our podcasts at one time. Is, you know, there could be 400 or 500 people in the room.
Different times, yeah.
Just as many people can. Yeah, other people listen at different times. So I think we're going to set a new record on Monday.
Yeah, I think it'll turn out well. I'm kind of I'm nervously excited for it. The idea is that we're going to do a live show on stage. It's going to be very similar to this format. You and I are going to, they're going to play our, you know, our intro, you know, jingle, and you and I are going to come up on the stage. We're going to sit down. It's supposed to look like we're recording something. I'm not sure how that's going to look, but we'll do it live. You and I are going to have our normal sort of upfront banter. It was specifically requested that we do banter. So we'll have some of that. Yeah. And then we'll introduce our guests. We're going to talk about FIDO authentication, passkeys, things like that. And we've got a few people that have been scheduled and maybe a surprise guest. We'll see. But we'll have product managers basically from TikTok, Google, and eBay that are going to come up and sort of join the show as sort of like a group interview, live show. And we'll, run through our normal kind of questions and things like that. And we are going to, I'm even thinking like, what are we going to do for a lighter note? So I've got some good ideas on how we're going to end the show with, shenanigans and hijinks and just fun stuff that I like to do at the end.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what makes it fun for people. Like, we always want the podcast to be educational and entertaining. So, that's usually the entertaining part. But we're also at the conference going to be recording some individual podcasts that will drop over the next 2 weeks, I think. So day one, we're recording for the second time with David Motti from Transmit Security. He's like the Cheeto Chief Identity Officer. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to be talking to us about everybody's talking about their, what they're presenting. But then, of course, we'll go off on all the side trails to make it even
us. No, we would never do that.
Yeah. What, me complain? David will be talking about machine identities, which I think is a huge topic. Well, Stephanie Schucker on. So Stephanie was presented to us as the premier biometrics expert in the world. And we talked to her for, what was it, a half hour, Jeff? And I'm like, yeah, I can see that. I don't know all the biometrics experts in the world, but she probably gets that award.
Best biometric person on the best identity podcast in the world. Bam. Take that.
Bam. We got Pam Dingle on. I mean, everybody knows who Pam is with Microsoft. I think there's so much that we can talk about that we have to make sure that we get to the top issues, and primarily we want to give her some time to talk about like what she's presenting on, because it's top of mind for her. We're going to have Pedro Martinez on from Talos Group. Pedro's there talking about passkeys in financial services, but I think he's going to talk more broadly than just financial services. And so we'll get that perspective, because I think he's the only person we're talking to specifically about passkeys. And I think, at this point, that's the major theme for FIDO Alliance. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe it'll be AI.
I'm sure it'll come up. I'll find a way to weave that into our keynote is something about AI.
Yeah. And then we have Ori Eisen from TrueSona. He's going to be talking passwordless. So excited about that conversation as well. I mean, passwordless for me is like, that was like last year's buzz. I feel like we've made some progress. I was thinking this past year was going to be the year of passwordless. I don't know that I can say that that's what it was. Maybe we'll look back on it and we will see that. I think that's a big thing I want to see to authenticate. What are the customer success stories that tie back to passwordless? There were some good ones last year. I want to see if is it becoming even more mainstream.
Well, I think it has to start somewhere. The technology is there now, and we've got basic interoperability between devices and platforms and OSs, right? I think this last year will be the beginning of that wave that we thought would be coming sooner. But hey, better late than never. I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to see more passkeys options popping up when I'm signing into things. Google actually, I think it was this week, earlier this week, they announced passkeys by default for every user now. That's a big step.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Okay. It's 11:30 p.m.
Not here. It's only 9:30.
Yeah, right. It'll be interesting to see what happens next week. I'm kind of bummed that I'm only going to be there a couple days. I have to take a super early flight Wednesday morning to get to Indianapolis. So while you're still sunning yourself in California, I'm headed to Indianapolis for another conference, a government focused thing in Indiana. So that'll be fun, I guess. I'll see my friend Andrew, so that's good. We'll have a good time, I'm sure, the two of us, talking government and identity and things like that.
So leaving early Wednesday morning, does that mean you're not going to partake in any of the social hour activities?
It's Tuesday unlikely. Night? I think my flight's at like 6 a.m. or something like that on Wednesday. So I'm going to be like in recording and then basically like pack up my stuff, go to sleep and be out of there.
I'll drink all of your alcohol then.
Oh, thank you for making that sacrifice. Yeah. appreciate that. You want to end on a later note?
Yeah, let's do that.
You had an idea when we talked about it, and I have a follow up if we have time and we think about it again. What was yours?
Okay, so mine was, what is the best? And I'm going to spring this on you. What is the best and worst airports you've been to?
Okay. Well, the best one that I've been to would probably be Haneda Airport in Japan. And now it's been probably like 10 years since I was there. Maybe 7, but just a super nice airport, super clean. Very impressive kind of walking in and having like these just high architecture ceilings and trees and the infamous Hello Kitty store that I had to sleep on a bench on outside because thanks to United, I missed my connecting flight into the Philippines. So, but even still, I think that was probably the nicest airport that I've been at. Worst airport. It's kind of hard to, that's kind of to say because every airport can totally suck. If you like have a bad experience in it, I'm not sure how to answer that because I feel like it could be any airport.
So let me remind you of one. So we were in Connecticut. I think it was Sanford, Connecticut. And it was like a bus station. And it was like, there was like nowhere to sit, no outlets to plug into. That one was pretty bad.
Yeah, I think
LaGuardia in New York is really bad.
Oh, it used to be bad, but it's actually nice now. At least the United Terminal. Now? Yeah, it's really nice. I mean, it's a great turnaround. I mean, it's kind of what you want to see, but I remember being in LaGuardia once and I was sitting in one of the terminals and there was like to call it a leak would not be fair to leaks. This was like just an open water faucet coming through the ceiling into the middle of the concourse. And I was like, yep. Everything I'd heard about LaGuardia was instantly true. I saw that. But they have turned it around. They've got new construction there. It's actually quite nice now.
I think one of the things that's really annoying, if you want to go from like one terminal to the next, you have to get on a bus. And it's like, it feels like you're driving for like 10 minutes to get to this terminal that's probably, 100 yards away.
Chicago's like that right now, O'Hare, because first of all, they had like the people mover, the tram monorail type thing was down for like 4 years. And then now that's the only way you can get between some of the terminals because they're doing construction everywhere. O'Hare is a real pain right now trying to move between terminals. It's just not fun.
Yeah. So I'm going to surprise with my answer. My favorite airport is Detroit.
That is a nice airport.
It's a nice airport.
Yep.
Minneapolis isn't too bad. Like that shopping mall that they have in the middle is pretty nice, but I mean, getting from one end to the other is a real pain in the neck. So I'm not a big Minneapolis airport fan. I'm also not a Charlotte airport fan. I think people think, oh, it's so quaint. The middle area's got these rocking chairs and stuff. But if you get dropped in like E and you've got to get to the other end of C or something, like it could be like a half hour walk. It's it's not good when you have a tight connection because then you start running. And then you get to the gate and like your plane's already taken off. So yeah, I'm not a big Charlotte fan. I'm going to go with Detroit as the best. I also have to give honorable mention to, and I haven't done a ton of international travel, but the airport in Amsterdam, I think it's called Schiphol.
I don't know. Never been.
Man, I don't like it. And I don't know if like all the European airports are like this, but it's like, there's like a waiting room concept for each gate and you go through the security, they check your ticket and check your passport. And then you go and you like sit there and wait for them to board the plane. So like the common area is almost like, I think it's almost like public. It's been a really long while since I've been there, but I hated that airport.
Like I said, any airport can be bad if you think about it hard enough or if you have a disastrous event in an airport. I thought of something as a follow-up lighter note, and this is a challenge that I'm pretty sure I'm going to win. What's the best meal that you had this week?
Ooh. That's pretty good ones, man. We had sushi last night that was pretty out of this world. Very expensive. Fortunately, it's not on my expense report.
So I went out to dinner with our good friend Daniel. We went to a chef's tasting.
I mean, that's always when Daniel's ordering. I mean, you're gonna get the best of the best.
Well, we went to a place just that he and I, and we had a chef's tasting. And let me just read the menu to you because this is what we had in one sitting. And different courses. First course was corn, carrot, and radish, sort of a tasting menu type thing. Corn with pine nut, carrot with hay, which is kind of interesting, radish with rose. Then we followed that up with oyster and a preserved mustard, surf clam and a fermented black bean, hamachi and black vinegar, jellyfish with Thai basil, and a smoked trout roe with seaweed.
Hamachi is what, eel?
I don't want to know because I stepped way out of my comfort zone for this dinner.
This is sushi, so
yeah. Right? I mean, I had oyster, I had surf clam, I had hamachi, jellyfish, trout. I mean, these are things that I would.
You
normally
had jellyfish?
Eat. Yeah, jellyfish with Thai basil.
I've never eaten jellyfish. Okay. What was it like?
I don't remember. Sting on there the was also down. Wine. then we had crab with saffron and ginkgo. That's when things started to take a turn for the better because I'm not really of the sea. We then went to a rabbit soup dumpling with blueberry vinegar, an antelope tartare with apple, and then a chicken wing that was stuffed with cordyceps. Not a mushrooms person, but that was actually not bad. A black truffle consomme with pecan tofu, and then capped off on the savory side with a spiced goat leg with scallion and sesame. For dessert, it had, it was like a basil ice cream type thing with melon, and I think it was cantaloupe, but I'm not exactly sure. And then a sweet potato cereal with toasted milk.
That sounds really great.
Yeah, like, Daniel's like, amazing. He's like, you stepped out of your comfort zone. I'm like, no. I leaped out of my comfort zone with that meal.
I was going to say,
that wasn't even close.
Did you leave there and go and get like McDonald's or anything?
No, that was it. That's all I had. In fact, I don't think I actually ate anything the rest for that day. So that was kind of like everything all in once.
I should have told you as the answer to your question. Like I had the chicken sandwich at Popeyes today.
And hey, that's good too. Hey, teach their own.
Woo, is that good?
I'll do Taco Bell. I'm not fancy. I don't discriminate. I'll eat anything for the most part. Yeah. Any fast food, I should say. But this was definitely a meal that was like way outside my comfort zone. So I'm kind of glad I tried it.
Jellyfish, I mean, that's serious stuff right there.
Yeah. Hey, it started off a little bit rough because it was that oyster with mustard shooter, two things I don't really like.
I love oysters.
I tried it. And I like coughed right away, and Deanna just starts laughing at me. That was literally the first course type thing that came out. Yeah. And I was like, "Oh, this is going to be a long night."
The antelope,
right? Yeah, exactly. But it was good. The best part, of the meal though, wasn't the food. The food was actually really good. It's a place called Apartment 115 in Austin, a little bit off of downtown, not too far away, but it was kind of a cool spot. Was the chef who kind of prepared everything would come out. And he provided facts about what he was giving you in a very short, I would say an unfriendly way. It was just like, here's this, take it one bite, enjoy. And then you just walk away. And we were having a good time with that. And our server was super, you know, friendly and knowledgeable. And everyone there was actually pretty great. But we were getting a kick out of like the chef coming over and just not being Mr. Personality.
I've heard when you have like a sushi chef, like, they put the amount of soy sauce on it that you're supposed to have. So if you like, you used to go into a sushi place and like dipping your in the soy, like that's not how you do it at like the
three Michelin star sushi places.
You got to taste your food before you decide to add more seasoning. I think that's a very American thing. Is like, oh, you get the food and then it's like you just throw in salt and ketchup on it without even having tried it yet. that's a cardinal rule of eating. You should not be doing that. Taste the food first. Then if you need to add things to it, do it.
It's the cardinal rule, but it's like, I already know I want ketchup on my french fries.
Yes. But as a side, I'm more like thinking of like throwing ketchup on your steak, right? Or things like that, or adding salt before you've even tried it. I mean, that's bad.
Ketchup on your steak. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Who would do that? Only lunatics would. all right, let's go ahead and wrap it up. Before I turn into a pumpkin. So this is going to go out Monday in a couple days. We're sort of competing with our keynote, but hey, that is kind of cool for people who aren't watching our keynote. Maybe they're listening to this. And what else?
We're Anything told else? We'll get a recording of the keynote, so we'll be able to publish that. Our plan is to publish that as like the capstone of all the recordings we do next week. So look forward to that. Man, if we don't get that recording, I'm going to be kind of ticked off.
Yeah, I have faith and confidence. I think we'll get that. I just don't know when I'm gonna have time to pull it all together because I'm gonna be traveling so much over the next few weeks. So it'll probably be an interesting release schedule, but here we are, you know, almost midnight, just trying to get something out for Monday to keep the streak alive, and we're gonna do it. I'll definitely be able to get this edited out in time, and then we'll figure out the Authenticate release schedule from there.
Oh, and by the way, I listened to the episode with you, Ian, and Hutch. I thought that's one that everybody should listen to. That was hilarious. Got into the D&D conversation. Got into the alarm thing. And I'm telling you, like, in San Francisco, it's like I was the only one who knew this thing was going to happen. No one seemed to care.
That was a fun conversation. I know. I just have a good time. Every time Ian's on, he's great. First time I've been able to meet Hutch, he was great, too. That was just, you know, just three dudes sitting in a back room talking pretty much.
I'm telling you, man, Ian could be like a stand-up comedian. He's a funny, he's got a quick wit.
Yeah. That's why he's who he is. He's doing these keynotes and all kinds of stuff.
That's true.
All right, let's wrap it up. You can find us on the web, idacpodcast.com, on Twitter or X or whatever we call it, idacpodcast, Mastodon at idacpodcast, at infosec.exchange. We have our new LinkedIn page that I have yet to really promote, but I've been subtly like tagging it in all of the recent LinkedIn posts whenever I post something, you know, a new episode or whatever it is. And we've got some followers there. So subscribe, like, share with friends. For the folks who came up to me at Navigate, people like Patrick, Edvin, Matthew. There were a couple guys from Sweden that I met. I think one of them's name was Marcus. I can't remember. Sorry. But the people who came up and introduced themselves was very cool. I handed out some stickers, so you'll be happy to know that there are more stickers in the wild. Thumbs up from Jim. But yeah, that's why we do this, is just to have conversations about identity like we do here and hopefully share with the world. Anything else, Jim?
No, man. Sleep time.
Yeah. Sleep time, and just in time for my dog to start chewing his pet, his little Nyla bone thing here. So we'll wrap it up. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk with you all in the next one.
You've been listening to Identity at the Center. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review, and we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hit the website at identityatthecenter.com and find us on Twitter at IDAC Podcast. See you next time on Identity at the Center.